calling. Now don't look to us. Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Huddersfield Town at John Smith Stadium. On top of that, we'll have another edition of the Cottage Talk Roundtable. We have much to discuss, but before we get going, I have to welcome my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show. David, how you doing?
Well, it's good to be on the show again, Russ. Nice to speak to you. Hello, everyone. Look forward to doing this show and discussing, obviously, the match ahead and hopefully my little survey we did as well yesterday on Twitter about Fulham's final finishing position.
We will definitely talk about that, and I also put up a couple of the topics we'll be discussing in the Cottage Talk Roundtable, so I'll be sharing some of the comments from the Fulham supporters. Also put up a prediction for the Fulham supporters on the Cottage Talk Twitter poll. We have a good amount to get through, David, but I have to start the show with some very sad news from the Cottage Talk family and also the Fulham family. Unfortunately, I'm here to tell you right now that that Emilio Donnell, one of our co-hosts, his father passed away last night, and it is extremely sad news. Emilio's father has been dealing with this illness for a while, and unfortunately last night was the night that he did die, and I am dedicating this episode of Cottage Talk in the memory of Giuseppe Donnello. So I just wanted to start off by mentioning that and just want to share a couple little stories about Giuseppe and Emilio, because they were extremely close, and Giuseppe took Emilio to his first game on Boxing Day in 1980, to see Fulham play Sheffield Wednesday, and Fulham actually won that match 2-1. Also want to mention that before the Juventus match, Emilio was trying very hard to find his father. He could not find his father. You know, he went to Craven Cottage, could not locate his father. Well, he finally did locate his father. His father was talking to Roberto Mancini before the match, because it was the type of person Giuseppe was. He would start a conversation with anyone. He was talking to Roberto Mancini, who was there scouting Fulham for a match that was going to happen a few days later. And you know, I've talked to Emilio a great deal about his father, and this is extremely sad news. And I just wanted to do something for Emilio, so I am dedicating this episode in the memory of his father, David. And you know, I thought it was very important to mention that Emilio was a dear friend. You're a dear friend too. We've all had to deal with loss. You dealt with 2 years ago losing your mother, and if there's one thing that I could do over, David, I would have dedicated an episode of Cottage Talk back then, and I should have done it then. I'm doing it now for Emilio, but we need to look back at our family members, and because they are part of the total family here, and cherish those moments. So I wanted to share that. I'm very upset by this. Obviously, Emilio is very upset, but I wanted to do something, so that's what I've decided to do, David. And that's the news I'm sharing to begin the show.
Yeah, it's very sad to hear. I knew his father had been unwell, because I've spoken a few times to Emilio about it. So, my heart goes out to Emilio, obviously, and to his whole family. I know how difficult these things are. It's never an easy time for these things. You know, my mum was old. She had dementia, and she hadn't been herself for many years. But it was I still found it a terrible loss when she went. I thought it would be easier than it was, but it wasn't. So I know exactly how Emilio must be feeling right now. If there's any good thing to come out of it, if we can take a positive out of it, I'm going to try and be Mr. Positive.
Okay.
We wouldn't all be here if it wasn't for our parents or whatever, for one reason. Your dad, obviously, he likes the other team in Fulham, so obviously
he does.
For you being argumentative like you are, Russ, you of course supported Fulham. You made the right choice. My late father and late mother both went to Fulham many, many years ago, and it was my late father who got me to choose Fulham over the other team in Fulham.
That's
and
great.
And of course for Emilio as well, we have stories about, you know, as you've just said. So, you know, we've all come together, and this kind of life that we share, as Cottage Talk co-hosts and Fulham fans, you know, wouldn't be there without, you know, our parents having some influence in some way. So there's a little bit of a positive, I hope, to come out of this sad news anyway.
Yes, and I'm glad that you said that, David. And, you know, honestly, I took the news very hard. I've been talking often to Emilio about this, and it's difficult. It's difficult. My heart goes out to him, his mother, his entire family, his fiance Callie. I'm thinking about all you guys, and you're all part of the Cottage Talk family, the Fulham family. Giuseppe, part of the Cottage Talk and Fulham family. So, like I mentioned, and then we'll start the show. This show is dedicated to the memory of Giuseppe Dinell. All right, David, let's now get on to the show, and let's go into the Cottage Talk Roundtable. And I had a very interesting show with our friend Giannis yesterday. We talked about two of these subjects that we're going to talk about now, and there's been some interesting commentary on the Cottage Talk Facebook page about this, and I actually reached out to you because I wanted some interesting topics for this show that we were going to do, and I believe your son came up with both of these topics. So we are going to talk about them. Let's start here, and this is a very good one. David, do Fulham lack some strength in the midfield?
I think we certainly lack something along those lines. My son, the reason he came up with this was because he feels that the reason our defence is so bad, apparently, that we give away so many goals, is that the opposition side just brush our midfield aside too much. We let too many people just run through the middle at us, or even down the wings. We don't stop them on the wings, and we don't stop them in the middle. And I certainly think that one of the things you notice about our midfield is we seem to be very short. We seem to be quite a short team overall. I know we've got people like Dan Byrne, who are pretty much probably one of the tallest people you'll find. But otherwise, you know, you look at the people who tend to play in midfield, and especially. And when you look at, obviously, even some of the people who've played in defence, like, you know, Tim Ream, you know, they're not particularly short, or Stearman. But we haven't been very dominant in the air, not when defending, not when attacking. You know, when was the last time we scored a header from a corner, an example? Look at all the ones we've given away. But you say I think the taller players we have aren't particularly commanding in the air, not in the main. I'm not saying it's not everyone. I mean, Matt Smith, obviously, when he plays, he's usually quite good in the air. But in the midfield as such, we seem to be quite short. Parker's not that tall. O'Hara isn't particularly tall. Hyman's probably not very tall. I'm trying to think how many more we could go through, really. But we don't have, you know, someone who's particularly big and dominant in midfield in the air. And on the ground, you know, we run about, but how many crunching tackles do we really put in? I don't think that much. I don't think we're a very strong side in that way, if you think about it. I mean, the last time I can remember that was going back to that Derby match again last season, where Scott Parker was magnificent, and he was winning all these really great tackles, if you remember, and he took the ball off Will what's-his-face and everything, you know, Will Hughes.
Will Hughes, yeah.
Just remember for a minute, the memory's not always there, but I knew who I meant. I could picture him in my head. Yeah, Will Hughes, and you remember that crunching tackle there? But we haven't seen much of that, really. And, you know, I imagine Jokanović is going to be... I imagine he's quite a tough guy, really. So perhaps he's going to instill a bit of toughness in there. So I certainly agree with that we don't seem to be physically very large in midfield, and we don't seem to be that strong in the tackle. Hence, probably why people have jumped to this kind of situation, like maybe we should get someone like Sidwell back, someone who's going to fly into challenges, give away fouls left, right and centre, get sent off, free kicks and things. But at least... It makes it look like, you know, you have a bit of strength there when people are doing that. So, yeah, I know, I would agree, really, that physically we're not very strong. Mentally, we're certainly not very strong, I think. But yeah, on all fronts through the midfield, people can get past us too easily. You know, I suppose one for that would be like Ipswich, for you know, how they just from, you know, after 15 seconds, they've run through and scored a goal. You know, no one to stop them. No one to put a challenge in. Yes, they caught us cold. It was so early, but it was a real elementary thing to give away. It's like fool's mate at chess, you know, getting checkmate after four moves or something. It was that, you know, 15 seconds, 16 seconds, wasn't it? No strength there. No one putting a challenge in. So certainly I would agree with that.
Okay, and we have some very interesting comments, and one is going to go right to what you exactly just said, David. Gary Martin left this message on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. This is what he said. What we lack is mental strength. Our squad, including our midfield, has enough physical strength to be competing so much better in this league. Okay, let's see. This is the one that stood out for me. I have several, but I'm going to share this one because I want your commentary on this. Ollie Asbro said, I think we're missing Tunnicliffe. David, I think he's 100% right.
Well, I would agree with him for, you know, for many reasons, because we haven't been as settled since we had Tunnicliffe. And I think O'Hara seemed to work well with Tunnicliffe. But, however, is we weren't pulling up roots, you know, when Tunnicliffe was in the team. We weren't top of the table. We weren't winning match after match. We still had the majority of the problems that, you know, we have now. So things weren't considerably better. You know, Kit Simons was sacked because we weren't doing well enough. Okay, we've probably done even worse since then because of the lack of stability. But whilst I think, you know, we do miss Tunnicliffe and what he's brought, it wasn't the solution either. I mean, you know, as I say, were we really that much better when we had Tunnicliffe? A little bit, maybe. A little bit more stability. But we had this quandary all the time that Tunnicliffe was the one who wanted to go more box to box. And O'Hara was the one sitting, and we're saying, should have been the other way around. And then we've had this situation where O'Hara has a couple of matches, the chance to get forward. And we're saying, actually, no, that doesn't suit him. He would have been better sitting back. So a lot of issues with the midfield as to the best personnel to have in there, the best two or the best three, right, if we're playing a 3-5-2 or a 4-5-1 or whatever. But I think Tunnicliffe has certainly done a lot better this season than we expected. I think pre-season, I said myself I could hardly see him getting into the team because he started the season on a ban, and we had other players who we thought would be prominent. Of course, Parker was out a lot longer than we expected. And then we've had people like LVC have been injured and perhaps haven't really found their form again so far. So Tunnicliffe has taken his chance, and I think he did very well. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens now, because whether Jokanović does something else, whether he does bring someone else in before Tunnicliffe gets back to fitness, or whether we muddle through with the players we have and hopefully stumble across the best combination to play in midfield.
No, it's very good points there, David. And to work off this, again, we have, and I said again twice, so that's two more points. I think I'm now up to about eight now. So this is really adding up fairly quickly there, David. John Mason left this message. We're missing a strong ball-winning midfielder in the mold of the wardrobe. Ituhu or more lately Sidwell. Not sure if Matilla or Tunnicliffe are the answer, but we also need a settled defense without changes in game by game and a period of managerial stability. Ben Hardwick then wrote, Tunnicliffe, Matilla, and Parker should be doing this. Haven't seen Matilla play. Tunnicliffe is inconsistent, and Parker thinks he's box-to-box at 35 and obviously doesn't want to do it. O'Hara plays deep, so should be helping out as well. Defense is a shambles. I hope the defensive coaches from Kit's reign have been sacked. If not, should be sacked immediately. How the hell did we manage to ruin four promising center backs? And then Ben Hardwick added that, haven't seen Matilla play enough. Paul Standerwick said, we're missing players like Ituhu and Papa Bouba Diop. So those are some more comments, David. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, I've said lots of times on the show how well our midfield worked when we had Ituhu. He used to get criticism sometimes because he
wasn't a style player. I think we missed Ituhu, David. I think we missed him.
Yeah, no, he wasn't a style player. But he was one of those players that I think Ituhu, you missed him most when he wasn't in the team. You realised,
that's right,
when he didn't play that's when you really realise what he's brought to the team. Because, you know, he was quite big and strong, and he was athletic, and he could break up play. And that, you know, it was quite simple, because alongside him in Murphy, he had a very creative guy who could, you know, unlock defences with passes. And having a two there did all the dirty work in the main for Murphy. Winning the ball, it allowed Murphy to do what he was good at. And this is what I hoped might be the case, obviously, with O'Hara, that if O'Hara had the right man alongside him, you know, to win the ball, to protect the defence, that O'Hara could concentrate more on unlocking defences with his passes. But it hasn't quite worked like that. Maybe because O'Hara isn't the same player as Murphy, maybe because we haven't got the right person alongside him. But, no, I certainly
agree.
Point. And again, I go back to all these things. When we had Atuhu and Murphy, Steve Sidwell couldn't get in the team. I was reading something on TIFF, and someone, they were talking about bringing Sidwell back, and someone said he was our fifth choice central defender. He went from being our central midfielder, he went from being our fifth choice to our first choice. And again, this is what I've been saying, how the quality of the players we've had to our disposal has fallen over the years. And, you know, it's funny because Atuhu, he never really was a success in many places, I think. You know, we got him, I think, from Sunderland, wasn't it, or something, on the cheap. He'd been at Man City, I think, and he'd been at Preston, maybe, if I remember rightly. But at Fulham, it just found his niche. It just worked really well for him there with the players alongside him. Because we had Murphy, who was a flair player in midfield. And, of course, on the wings, we had Davis for a while, who was obviously, you know, again, he was a combination of being a quality player and a hard worker. We had Duff, of course, who did actually used to work very hard for someone quite diminutive, but he was a flair player. And then, of course, Dempsey as well.
Dempsey.
Who, you know, was quite big and strong as well, but, you know, was a very useful player. He really found his niche at Fulham as well, Dempsey, playing in that left midfield role. And, you know, this is where, you know, playing inverted worked for us for some reason. We had Duff on the right and Dempsey on the left. So we didn't really have much width in that respect, but it worked. Duff was able to go outside on his right foot. But we just had a really good balance of players in midfield there. So it wasn't just perhaps having a two, but it was having the people around him. Because it's fine having someone like a two in the team, but you have to have creative people around him. If it had been other sort of ball-winning players, we'd have had all power and no creativity. At the moment, you know, we have people who potentially can create things. Heinemann, O'Hara, to name two. Certainly Tom Kearney. But out of those, you know, I think, you know, O'Hara can do a fairly defensive job. You know, Heinemann's not bad in the tackle, but Kearney's useless. But none of those are in the league of Dixon and Atuhu in terms of their strength and protection to the back four, I would say. And Matilla is the unknown quantity in this, I think, and he...
Potential.
You know, if he gets a chance to establish himself, I think he would be good. But because of that, again, I go back to my old 3-5-2 scenario. I think we would be better there, and Matilla can be one of those three in the middle, which allows us to play Matilla and someone like Kearney and still one other person, be it...
That's
O'Hara,
right. That's a good point.
Or be it Heinemann. Because I think, you know...
And that way you have your protection, David, but you still can have your creativity.
Yeah. But see, Murphy was an exceptional player. Even towards the end of his career, he did wonders at Fulham. And Atuhu was good at what he did. But I'm not sure if we had two in central midfield, if we have someone who is as good as Murphy would be to play alongside an Atuhu, if you know what I mean.
I think that's
why we need the three in central midfield. And that would add extra protection to the defence. I really believe that, because we certainly, you know, it's bad enough giving away possession and space on the wings, but through the middle is a no-no. We don't want teams running at us, taking long shots at us from these positions. We need better protection there. So we definitely need an Atuhu-type figure, I think, and maybe Matilla is the person, but are we going to see him get a chance there? And is Jukanovic going to pick the right formula so that Matilla can play, as I say, and someone like Kearney can play in the middle without, you know, sacrificing somewhere else. I don't know.
David, I thought you analyzed that really well, because what you're looking for is all the pieces to fit together in the midfield. If you have someone like Matilla, everything else has to complement each other, meaning your creativity, but also have someone that can help protect the back four. And I'd like to see what Matilla can do more. You know, we haven't seen enough of him. And I like your idea. You know, I'm all for the 3-5-2. I think that's a good fit. But it's also about the players. All the players have to fit together. I would like to see Matilla get more of a chance. I want to see what we have. Can he be that Dixon Atuhu? I don't know. Let's give him more of a chance. All right. I'm just going to read a few more comments, David. We had a good amount on this subject, so it was a very good topic by your son. Stuart Roberts left this message. We don't have any midfield player with defensive quality. Matilla is the nearest we have, but it's unproven as we're talking about. We're just too lightweight all over the pitch. Our friend Yavor Alexiev, he left this message. I believe that we should be playing a 4-5-1 with midfielders we currently have. The problem is we don't really have a striker that can play up top by himself. We also need a right midfielder. If we had those, an O'Hara, Parker, Matilla, or Kearney, LVC, Ryan, attacking midfielder, Kaká, Pringle, Fredericks, he was going through all the different permutations of this right midfielder. Midfield sounds good. So he's looking for a 4-5-1. What are your thoughts about what he's trying to look for, David, and, of course, also Stuart Roberts?
Well, I'll go to Yavor first. I mean, the 4-5-1, I think what he's basically, you know, it's another way of saying what I'm saying, that we need five in midfield, really. Two wide players and three in the middle. Okay, I favour the 3-5-2 because I think that it gives you, as I said, it's sort of the best of both worlds. You can have five defending and you can have five in midfield and you still have two strikers, not one.
That's right.
So that's why I prefer the 3-5-2 to the 4-5-1. But he's basically saying the same thing with the five, obviously, as you can see.
Yep.
Two people to offer you width, two people in the centre of it, and one certainly advanced maybe. You know, so you always have one very creative player in there or advanced like Kearney, for example, and one who's going to do the defensive job. Maybe that's going to be Matilla. So we're kind of on the same page, I think, there, myself and Yavor, just coming about it a slightly different way. Stuart Roberts, you know, exactly what I've been saying, really. You know, we haven't got any midfield player with defensive qualities, and Matilla is the nearest we have, but it's unproven, absolutely. And we are too lightweight all over the pitch. Again, as I was saying, that we seem to be physically a small side when it comes to, you know, aerial prowess and just general winning of the balls. I know when you look at the stats, you know, we probably win our fair share of tackles, but it just doesn't seem like that when you watch us. We just don't seem to be busy enough or hurried enough or energetic enough, or, you know, it just seems that we sit off too much and let teams come at us. And at key times, don't get enough tackles in, and hence we concede all these goals.
Now, very good point there, David. All right, we have two more comments here. Let's start with Stuart Abrey. He says, we've been a little unlucky the last few games. We seem to be coming up against sides who are scoring worldies. The three goals Wednesday got against us in the two games, and the third goal for Wolves last night also. Unstoppable. Throwing a linesman that I don't know what offside looks like, and I think Lady Luck has left us. And honestly, David, Stuart makes a very good point. Giannis and I talked about it. The second goal was offside. I've watched it several times, but the linesman, the ref, they didn't see it that way, and that hurt. Let's just be honest there. That hurt. Okay, and the final comment, I'm going to go with Chris Baugh. Me and my brother have been talking about this since the last season in the Premier League. We're crying out for a 6-foot-plus guy with strength and power. He doesn't need to be overly skillful, but just able to break up play and play a simple pass. David, he ends with this, dare I say, much like Atuhu. I think many of us are on the same wavelength on this, David.
Absolutely. I mean, he's just said exactly what we've been saying, that someone who's going to do that, like what Atuhu did, he doesn't have to be the most skillful player. It just has to be someone who can break up the play and give the ball to someone else who can do more useful things with it. And I think from what I've seen from Mutilla, he could potentially be that person. Potentially, yeah.
Potentially.
And I think, without doing any disservice to Atuhu, I think Mutilla is potentially a better passer of the ball than Atuhu is. Perhaps Atuhu is a little bit more muscular, a bit stronger, I don't know. But, you know, I think Mutilla certainly could be an option. But we haven't seen enough of him to make that judgment yet. He needs to have a consistent run, really, of a few games to see whether he's a flash in the pan or whether he is someone who you can rely on consistently.
No, very good, David. This is, a subject that I'm glad that we tackled. So I want to thank your son for bringing it to your attention so we could talk about this. And I've really enjoyed it because I see a need there. And let's see how Slavisa analyzes the team, and maybe we'll see Mutilla a little bit more. That's what I want to see. I think there's a place for him. If not him, someone else, bring in someone on loan. I know you don't want to see Sidwell, but I'm talking about someone that can do that defensive midfielder role, and I think that would be a good thing, not a bad thing. All right, David, let's move to the second.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, David, do you have one last thing you want
to
add?
All I was going to say was that I don't think Sidwell is the answer to the problem in this case. And also, when 14-year-old boys are analysing these things so well, you know, maybe we've got a short life expectancy, all us 40-somethings on the show. We're going to be, you know, we're going to have a new generation of cottage talk coming through. And, you know, the youth team will be coming through and taking our place soon.
Well, let me just say that your son knows what he's talking about. That's all I'm going to say on both of these. The other topic is, David, something that I've talked to you about, but your son brought this up as well. Do the positives outweigh the negatives with the play of Andy Lonergan? I'm curious your thoughts on this. We've seen some mistakes. We've also seen some fantastic saves. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I'm very critical of goalkeepers anyway, having played the position myself, and I look at things, and I think one of the goals at Sheffield Wednesday last week, maybe he could have done better. The second one, that was the New Year goal. I was looking at, you know, the goals from Wolves and the long-range shot. Again, I think he could have done better. I think he dived over it. You know, and I was critical of the Sheffield Wednesday at home match where he was beaten from a long range. It was a great strike, but he was beaten from a long range. And there seems to be a bit of a pattern with Lonergan getting beaten from long range. Short stuff is great. You know, one-on-ones, he's really, really good. But come long-range shots and also things like corners and crosses, he's rooted to his line. You know, he doesn't command his six-yard box at all, not really. So there are positives and negatives, I would say, about Lonergan. What we have to remember, obviously, he came here not as first-choice goalkeeper. Okay, I'm sure he came to challenge Marcus Bettinelli, but I think it was accepted that Bettinelli was going to be first choice and Lonergan was second choice. So the fact that we've had to rely on him for so long, I think he's a lot better than some of the other options. Just imagine having to play the whole season with pyjamas in goal, you know? that doesn't
I
bear
totally
thinking
agree,
about, really.
I totally agree, David. I totally agree.
For saying that, his old pyjamas is still first choice for Hungary, but I think the reason for that is He's the second choice for Hungary is Adam Bogdan, and if you've seen him play, you know why pyjamas is still first choice. But getting back to Lonergan, I think the positives for Lonergan is that, say, he's a good shot stopper, most certainly, on close-range stuff. He's good on one-on-ones. But long shots and crosses, no. Corners, not so good. But I think the other thing is, I suppose you'd say it as a positive, is I think overall you'd say he was better than Joe Lewis. Therefore, you know, it's good that we have him here. I mean, Joe Lewis, you know, as an occasional deputy, okay, but a few question marks about him as well. He's a taller man, and yet he's also stuck to his line, I think, really. So Lonergan, I think the negative is that we're stuck with him for so long. If he was someone who had to come in for the odd game here or there, he would be an excellent sort of backup. But overall, I don't know if other clubs have started to work him out. Maybe he's a bit weak on on, you know, long shots. They're saying, right, have a go from range, guys. Look at him. He's letting these goals in. if people think I'm being harsh, so be it, because you could say, well, these shots have all been hit perfectly. But, I don't know, what do you think? You know, for example, Russ, the third one against Wolves, it was a long way out, and he looked like he dived over it to me.
David,
I don't think you should be beaten from that range, personally.
David, Giannis and I went back and forth on this a little bit. I think that he thought it was a difficult save. I, like you, thought that he could have done better.
And that's the question. I mean, there have been a couple of howlers. I think he actually, in the original Sheffield Wednesday League match, he had a bit of a howler on one. He's had a couple of howlers, but in the main, they're all kind of a matter of opinion, these things with Lonergan. No one could say that he's done terribly badly, but it's just, you know, we think back, and I've seen people talking on the message boards about people like Mark Schwarzer. And Mark Schwarzer, even at his old age, he was coming out, he was taking crosses, he was dominating his area, and he was helping the defence out a lot. And I think that's what we really let, because Lonergan, if you watch him, you know, he very rarely comes off his line. And if he does, he tends to punch rather than catch the ball. And I say, we just have this question mark about the long-range shots. So I think it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's, the positive is that he's, as a second-choice goalkeeper, a reasonable keeper. That's always a problem, having a good keeper as a number two. Because if they're that good, they want to be a number one, of course. So it's like that, but I think we've been very unlucky with goalkeeping this year, you know, losing Bettinelli for such a time. And the good news, obviously, if you've seen, Bettinelli he seems to be up and about in an advanced state of training.
I saw the tweet, David. I was just about to mention, I saw the tweet.
So I'm actually surprised. I thought Bettinelli was out for a lot longer. Maybe he is still a lot longer, but I assume if he's doing glove work that he must be at quite a good stage of his recovery. And to see him back would be excellent. And I would think, as harsh as it sounds, that, you know, if he's fit, he'll get straight back in Bettinelli, because I think he's, you know, he's a young keeper, and he's going to get better and better, we hope. And he certainly has more confidence when it comes to coming out for crosses. And I think on long-range shots as well, really. I don't remember him being beaten and there being controversy or discussion about perhaps he could have done better or not. But, you know, we're stuck with what we have at the moment, and Lonergan has been, an able backup, but I wouldn't go overboard about it. I think we could do a lot better as a first choice, if you know what I mean.
I totally agree with that. I think you really analyzed this situation as well, very, very well. Able backup, that's what he was brought in to do. He probably, like you mentioned, wanted to compete for the starting role. But that was going to be Bettinelli's, and I'm glad that I saw the tweet as well that Bettinelli is on the road to recovery. I don't know how quickly he can get back, but that was a positive sign to see that tweet. So best of luck to Marcus, and get better soon. That's all I have to say about that. Nothing against Andy Lonergan, but I think he shows that he is a backup. He's second choice, and that's fine. He's average, maybe a little bit above average. Like you said, that's why we're going back and forth on the positives and the negatives. Okay, David, I'm just going to read a couple comments, and then we're going to go to your survey. I know you want to talk about your survey. We're definitely going to get to that. Let's start with Gary Martin. Out of all the stupid decisions Fulham have made since Conant has been at the club, selling David Stockdale was probably the craziest of them all. He's English, he's been at the club for a while, and was at the right age, but we choose to sell him, which left us with no first-team goalkeepers. Lonergan and Lewis came in, who are not even half as good as the goalkeeper we had in the first place. Stephen O'Keefe wrote, I personally think Lonergan has been good looking at yesterday's game. Jazz Richards was exposed. That's where the two of goals came. Should have kept Stockdale, though I agree, and Sidwell and Hanglin should have kept Muhlenstein. Been a lot of errors since Khan came. All right, David, what are your thoughts on those two comments from the Fulham supporters?
Well, seeing the criticism that Jazz Richards has received about the Wolves match, I would have loved to have listened in yesterday. I should have listened in yesterday to see what Giannis has to say, because obviously Giannis is a big fan of Jazz Richards, as we know. And so I assume the air was turned blue last night, was it, when you did that show? Yanis describing Yaz Richards. So that would won. But I mean, I think it's funny that both people have talked about Stockdale. I think there was quite a lot of regret that Stockdale left, because he was quite a favourite, because I think, you know, he was very much seen as being a club man. A bit like Dan Byrne is, I suppose. You know, Dan Byrne has his haters, but he's very much a club man, a loyal man. He loves the club. And people know that he gives 100%. I think Stockdale is a little bit the same, because if you've ever followed Stockdale with Twitter, he gets an awful lot of stick wherever he's been, really. I mean, at Brighton as well, because he's another goalkeeper that attracts sometimes a bit of controversy, that perhaps he could do better. And as we said when he was at Fulham, Stockdale was overlooked by several managers, and he never could get past Mark Schwarzer. And that kind of says it all for me, really. And Stockdale was definitely a reasonable goalkeeper. I think we said on a show that we all agreed that as a championship keeper, he was a reasonable goalkeeper. But we didn't think maybe he'd evolved enough, because people talked about him being a young keeper, but that went on for years and years, and he's now not as young as he was. He's still not old for a goalkeeper, but perhaps his development has come to, you know, it's reached its peak. And I don't think anyone's really ever convinced that he's good enough to be a Premier League keeper. Okay, in the Championship, yes. And I think one of the reasons for maybe when we did get rid of him, we thought, well, actually, we want to get back to the Premier League, we're going to need a better keeper than that. And I think when we first saw Bettinelli, establish himself, I think most people were in agreement that Bettinelli was probably a better keeper than Stockdale. So perhaps the right decision was made in that respect. But you know, the one I would go back to is getting rid of Schwarzer. The fact that he went on to play for the other team in Fulham and he's still at Leicester is testament to the fact that, you know, what a great goalkeeper he was, and we could have probably kept him. And I dare say we could have been better off from the stability that he would have brought us. So I kind of agree that we've had some crazy decisions getting rid of people, but some of the people we've got rid of either were never going to be better than they were, or they were getting old. You know, we've quoted Sidwell and Hangeland in that message there. Hangeland, you know, everyone says now we shouldn't have got rid of him. What a shame it is he went. But if you remember, his last season with us was pretty awful. He seems to lost a lot of his form. You know, what made him great? The errors started creeping in. He wasn't such a dominant threat in the air, not at set pieces, not attacking-wise. And, you know, our Premiership tenure came to an end, and it was time to offload some of the old guard, some of the high earners. It had to be done for business reasons, if nothing else. So, you know, we are where we are. But I think I would certainly say David Stockdale was on a par with Lonergan. He's as good as Lonergan. Maybe slightly better, I don't know. But so as a number two, you'd be very happy to have them if you don't need to play them all the time. But as a number one, I think you need someone better than that. A goalkeeper is such a key position, you know, and a great goalkeeper it spreads to the defence, the confidence to the defence. The fact that a keeper can come and take the ball and take the pressure off the defence, it's a wonderful thing to have in the team if you've got a goalkeeper like Schwarzer used to be. Remember Schwarzer at Shakhtar Donetsk? I don't know, you know.
I remember that, David.
You know, he kept his out. Okay, Shakhtar Donetsk is probably not the best example, because they weren't that. Of all their strengths, their weakness was they weren't very good in the air, not particularly. They never looked a threat from corners. But I can remember him making some great saves. I can remember him claiming the ball. So many matches I can remember Schwarzer coming and claiming the ball from corners and things like that. And just the breath of relief you got, you know, just to have the ball safe, under control and everything. And it's a great thing to have, as I say. And it's such a key thing to get a good goalkeeper. It's worth its weight in gold to get a good goalkeeper.
So, I totally agree. And that's why I like the fact. Oh, I'm sorry, David. Keep going.
No. I say we've made some stupid decisions, but I'm not sure if Stockdale was the answer. I think we went through this many, many months ago or a year or two ago. He was a good number two, most certainly. But as a number one, I don't know. I wouldn't rate him much differently probably to Lonergan overall. As I say, for me personally, I would want a better keeper than both of those. as my number one.
Okay, and what's interesting about all this, we're talking about Marcus Bettinelli, such a young goalkeeper. You might have a goalkeeper for years and years to come. You're developing your own. That's what I like about Marcus Bettinelli. You don't know how good he could get. He's still developing. So I like the fact that he will be our number one goalkeeper. There's so much upside there. And I think, you know, I like Stockdale, but I do like what they have, what the promise, what the potential they have in Marcus Bettinelli. So I look forward to Bettinelli getting back in the mix. All right, David, let's go to your survey for about 4 to 5 minutes, and then we're going to get into our preview.
Yeah, I thought after we've done our predictions, you know, a few weeks ago, where you've said you think we'll finish 10th, and I've said I think we'll finish 14th, I decided to throw it open to people on Twitter. And I try to make it as simple as possible. I try to make it as fair as possible. So basically, you have four options in these Twitter polls. So basically, the options were 21st or worse, which means relegation, 17th to 20th, so covers four places there, 13th to 16th, likewise, 12th or higher. I mean, I could have skewed it to include more higher numbers specifically, but I think 12th or higher really does cover quite a bit because of where we are now. And it's been quite interesting, the poll, but not too unsurprising, really. So out of the positions, the biggest majority or the biggest number of votes were 44% of people who replied. We had 195, so almost 200 votes. So
that's fantastic.
A reasonable survey.
That's good.
A reasonable survey. If only five people had voted, it's difficult to say. But for 195 people, the biggest response was 44% think we'll finish between 13th and 16th. So 13th, 14th, 15th, or 16th, which is by coincidence where I said I think we'll finish. saying that, the way we've been playing, I'm starting to wonder if I should reconsider. But so that was the biggest grouping. So next biggest grouping was 36%. Think we'll finish 17th to 20th, so 17, 18, 19, or 20. So in total, 80%, so, you know, four out of five people who responded think we'll finish between 13th and 20th. Thankfully, you'll be pleased to know that the smallest group, 7%, thought we would finish 21st or worst, which is obviously means relegation. So only 7%. And there were 13% who joined you and the men in the white coats on 12th or higher. I'm saying that jokingly because we could easily finish 12th or higher. It's still mathematically possible by a long way. A few good results and things could change. But obviously at the moment things are a bit doom and gloom with, you know, three successive defeats. But 12th or higher was 13%. So that's where we are. Perhaps, you know, we'll do another one in a few weeks and see how people change. But say that the biggest majority just of people was, you know, between 13th and 16th is where they think we'll finish, which still, you know, as I said to you the other day, that still would be a positive step in a way, considering where we are now. To get to anywhere between 13th and 16th means we will have to improve upon our current position, which means we will improve upon this current run of results, hopefully, which I think we all expect to do once Jokanović gets, you know, his feet under the table and starts to devise and formulate a settled team and a plan and a way of working, and perhaps bring in a couple of loan players as well to fill in gaps that are perceived to be there. So as I say, let's review this again in a few weeks and see how we do with that.
David, I think we should do another poll. I completely agree with that, and it's reasonable. The phone supporters are being very reasonable. I'm on the edge, you know, I'm being Mr. Positive here. You're being right down the middle. You are being reasonable. I'm going to call David Holly being reasonable. I understand where you're coming from that. And let's see how this all plays out. The only thing that I want to add is people might know this, but while we were in the premiership, I contacted several fans of Derby County, and some people don't like that I also have friends that follow the team and got to follow them as my championship side when we were in the Premier League for a little bit. And I got to really get to know these people and these fans. And it's so funny because right now we are going through a similar situation that Darby County went through back then. The same conversations, everything, the same situation, and it just took time for them to get it right. And I think in Fulham's situation, it's just a matter of time. That's how I feel, but that's also a Mr. Positive. All right, David, let's get into this preview. To start the preview, I'm going to read some quotes that are on the Fulham website from Slavica and get your thoughts on that, and then we will go through some information on Huddersfield Town. Sound good?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Again, you could, and I did it, David, that's another pound. That's up to nine. This article is on the Fulham website entitled Jokanovic's Town Preview, and I'll just share some quotes from Slavica. Quote, I've been here 2 weeks. After a few games, we made some improvements. We pushed to be a little bit more organized, a little bit more compact, a little bit more competitive. But in this moment, this is not enough to win the games, and we cannot be satisfied. I believe we have improved. I believe we found a little bit more balance. I believe we've had more clear idea of what we need to do on the field. But it's simple. In this moment, it's not enough to win the game. If someone had the opportunity to watch our three games, they probably can detect that. I'm here. I want to play a little bit differently, and I'm going to try and push my team to follow these plans. Then he goes on a little bit after that, talking about Huddersfield Town. With a new coach, it's a little bit different to how they played last season. They made a fantastic result, 5-0 on Tuesday against Charlton. It's the championship. Easy games don't exist, and not expecting anything to be easy for us, but we'll arrive with confidence that we can do what we need to win the game. We must believe we are a good team. We must work all together. Okay, we need to improve, definitely, and I'm going to push my team. I came here because I believe I can be successful here. It's a great club with a great history, and I'm going to push myself to be part of the great Fulham history. Okay, he then goes on a little bit longer into it. We are thinking about some options to be stronger in this position, talking about striker because of the situation with Colin Woodrow. We're thinking about the loan market and about people who can help us in the future. We're going to continue looking and try to improve this position. Half the January window is done, and we've not made steps. I expect next week we can make some important steps for us and bring some players who can help us in the future. We need players with character, with personality, with experience. Then he is asked the questions about players potentially leaving. On the subject of strikers, Jokanovic was quizzed yet again on the stories linking Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele with moves away from Craven Cottage. This is again from Slavica, and that's now up to 10 with that word. I don't want to speak out of speculation, he said. I said before my first press conference, I do not come here to sell people. I came here to work with the people that I have in my hands actually right now. I'm going to fight to not lose any key players. Our strikers have had a good season, and I did not come here with the ambition of selling these players. Okay, those are the comments from Slavica Jokanovic. David, what do you make of them?
Obviously, he's given his strongest hint about bringing people in. He kind of mentions the thing that frustrates us all, that, you know, half the window's gone and nothing's happened. You know, you think we could have been making better progress by now, but he needs time, obviously. The timing isn't quite right. I think there's a key difference when he says that I didn't come here to sell players, or I didn't come here to sell key players, I think. You know, I noticed a slight difference there, because I think he will get rid of, you know, several players probably eventually when it comes to the end of the season. I mean, there are people who are going to be out of contract anyway as it stands.
Sure.
But I think, you know, we are quite a big squad, and I think that, you know, he's going to find, you know, new people to come in, and he's going to have to get rid of people to make way for those. So I think obviously the key word was key, what he said there, that obviously there's certain players who know they're a red line, really. You know, on no account does he want to sell them. And obviously, you know, in that he's referring to McCormack and Dembele.
Dembele,
yeah. We may not have a choice with, obviously, if he doesn't sign a contract. McCormack, of course, is under contract to us for a few years still, so we certainly don't have to sell him. But I think he's starting to realise that, from other comments as well I've read, you know, what a state we are in, really, how disorganised, how feeble we are at times, letting away so many goals, giving away so many goals, and frustratingly as well. So I think it's starting to dawn on him now the enormity of the task. I'm sure he had an idea before he came here, but I think he's started to have a look at the players we have. He's starting to realise the weaknesses we have, and he knows he's got a big job ahead of him.
Okay, very good there, David. All right. What's interesting to me, I'm glad that you focus on that word key. When it comes to Dembele, that's a tricky one. McCormack, I don't see why you would sell him at this point. But with Dembele, I just hope that they don't. But we'll see how that all plays out. I also like how he's talking about having a need for another striker. We know this, and hopefully he will bring in another one. All right, David, let's now talk a little bit about Huddersfield Town. Again, this information, and I did it. David, I'm up to 11. This is crazy. Here's just some information on Huddersfield Town. This is according to WhoScored.com. Huddersfield Town are currently 16th. 8 wins, 7 draws, 11 losses. They've scored 35. They've given up 36. They are on a -1 goal differential, and they're on 31 points. Fulham are 19th. We've won 6. We have 9 draws, 11 losses. We've scored 42. We've given up 46. We're on a -4 goal differential. So the goal differential isn't much different, and we are on 27 points. Players to watch include midfielders Amir Hughes, Jonathan Hogg, and Joe Lawley. Their leading goal scorer, someone that is dangerous, Naki Wells, has 9, so definitely have to look out for him. And their leader in assists with 7 is Harry Bunn, who is an attacking midfielder. Their characteristics, strengths, creating chances using through balls, stealing the ball from the opposition, creating long shot opportunities. That's not a good one. Shooting from direct free kicks. Weaknesses, aerial duels, avoiding fouls in dangerous areas, and they're very weak in defending against through ball attacks. That could be a positive for Fulham. Their style, attempt through balls often, attacking down the right, attacking down the left, short passes, possession football, play with width. They rotate their first 11, and they are aggressive. David, I watched a good amount of video on Huddersfield Town. Let me just tell you, they are completely different than the two opponents Fulham have played. This team wants to have the ball. This team is going to fight Fulham for the ball. The possession in every match I looked at recently was highly in favor of Huddersfield Town. So they want to possess the ball. All right, David, with all that information, who are your key Fulham players in this match?
Well, I think, as I try to say for Wolves, we need to be strong with the two banks of four kind of situation. You've said that they like playing their through balls and they like shooting from distance. So I think especially in the middle, we need to be strong. So I would say this is a time maybe to think about making a change, maybe even going to the 3-5-2, trying the 3-5-2,
okay.
And, to give you that extra central defender, to give you that extra central midfielder, maybe to try and at least cut down on these things. Whether he does it, I don't know. But if in that case, you would be looking at someone like Matilla to come in and play that holding role. I mean, obviously, if you play 4-4-2 with Matilla or that type of thing, he does give you that almost that third central defender scenario, if you know what I mean, if you can understand the thing, because he sits there very deep, almost between the two central defenders. But perhaps if you played that as a 3-5-2 with Matilla as a central midfielder, you've almost got 4 central defenders in there. So you should really be very strong in that part,
That's a good point.
But whether he does that, I don't know. But I think this is the key. This is really where we have to be. I mean, listen to what, my son has said and thought about it myself. And it is, the midfield is just not strong enough. We need to toughen up in midfield. If we stop them in midfield, they can't take long shots. Well, they can try, but they'll be even further out. And they can't put pressure on our defence. The interesting thing will be that Richards had a shocker the other night, which is no surprise.
He did, David. He was horrible in this match defensively. He set up the goal by LVC, but defensively, I watched this back, probably his worst match as a Fulham player, in my opinion.
I was interested that he was substituted. You don't normally see a fullback being substituted unless they're injured. So was he substituted for form reasons or for change? Has Jokanović seen the light? Will we see Fredericks coming in? And if we do see Fredericks coming in, then go to the 3-5-2 because it fits us better. So central midfielders and central defenders to be strong, for me, is what we really need to do.
Okay, very good there, David. All right. I think you did a really good job of analyzing the situation. We only have a little over 4 minutes, so I need you to go right into your starting 11.
Okay, I'm gonna be my starting 11. I don't care what Jokanović thinks is my starting 11, yeah?
Okay, go
so
ahead.
So we'll have Lonergan in goal. We don't have a lot of choice there. Three central defenders, you could sort of pick any two from wherever, but I think I would have, I would reinstate Stearman and Ream as the right and the left. In the middle, it would either be Hutchison or Byrne. I'm almost tempted to give Hutchison a go because Byrne's had a good run lately, but then Byrne did have a very good game last week. So
he did.
Between the two of them, one of them anyway.
Okay.
Wing-backs Fredericks and Garbutt. Three in central midfield.
This is interesting.
I think I would go for Matilla to hold, Heinemann to create, and Kearney also, you know, as a slightly more forward creative aspect. And then up front, of course, the two usual, McCormack and Dembele. So, yeah. So the key is, Matilla really would be holding, and with Heinemann and Kearney advancing in front of them. So Matilla's got an important job to do there, but sitting in front of the back three, we should make us much stronger through the middle. And if, you know, with Garbutt and Fredericks pushed forward, hopefully it will keep their wide players pushed further back, if you know what I mean. And that will squeeze the play, squeeze the pitch, and that will work against them trying to have too much possession. So that could hopefully disrupt their game plan. But what do I know, Russ?
You've sold me. I love your starting 11. I love the formation. You know I love the formation. I think that gives us the perfect balance, and I think it gives us the protection that we need, but also gives us the power to go forward. I think you got the balance right. The question is, will Slavica go with that? I love that. I actually, every part of that I enjoyed. If I had to choose between Hutchinson and Byrne, I'm going with Hutchinson. That's the only other thing. I think Garbutt can play that wing-back role, David. That's been a question, but I think he can. And I do like your three in central midfield. I like how that would look. Let's see if he goes with that. I really like that. All right, David, we only have 2 minutes left. Real quickly, we have to go to predictions, but I will give you the results of the poll. I put this up late, so we only have 93 votes. Loss is at 46%, win is at 32%, and draw is at 22%. Okay, we only have 90 seconds, David. What's your prediction?
Can you guess which one I voted for out of those?
Loss.
Yep, you're right. I don't have faith that he's going to find the right balance yet. He's not going to pick my 3-5-2 much as I want him to. I think he's going to muddle through with something else, probably. And I think Huddersfield, on the back of that 5-0 thrash in the chart, are going to be very confident. And if they start, you know, on a roll, they could catch us cold early on and that will be game over. Saying that, my 14-year-old knowledgeable son is dying for us to go, and I might yet still go to this match. And so who knows what will happen. I might be there to cheer us on. But I can't see us getting anything. I just can't again, I'm afraid. It could be close. It could be like a 2-1 to Huddersfield, but I'm just not quite sure if we're advanced yet enough to start winning matches, I'm afraid.
Okay. I'm going to go 3-1 to Fulham. I think we're going to shock them. I do. I'm going for an upset, 3-1 to Fulham, and a hat-trick by Ross McCormack. Have to do it, David. We only have 20 seconds left. Great show. Thank you very much. I'm on my way to Florida. You and Mike are going to be hosting the Sunday show. Look forward to listening to it. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers. Take
Cheers,
care, David.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Now war is declared. Rise and girl, London calling. Now don't look down.